Your comfort is our concern.
You're listening to The Morning Line with Megan Brady this morning, 8:42 now. That means it's time for... I don't think you're ready for this yet. I don't think you're ready for this yet. I don't think you're ready for this. So this is your intro music, Seth?
Yeah. This is it.
That's fantastic. I absolutely love it. Good morning. So it's time for Portsmouth Radio 5-0. And I love it when a detective shows up with intro music. That's a new one for me.
I don't think. Yeah.
It's Michelle.
Did you miss your music?
I can't hear anything. Yeah. What happened?
I don't hear.
Technical difficulties.
Now we're there.
Does that feel... Are we good?
Yes.
Oh, I can hear you now.
All right. I just didn't want you to hear that part of the song. I just wanted everyone else to hear it.
So. Oh, darn.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Michelle.
Hi.
It's fantastic to have you here. So I'm sorry. I have to stop before we dive in. And we'll get to you, Seth. I promise.
No worries.
You had to pull someone over on your way here.
Honestly, like every time I try and come here, I have to do police work. It's really getting in the way of my radio show with Megan. Yeah, it was great. I went through a light and it was yellow. And then somebody snuck through behind me, which was probably turning red, I will guess. And then somebody snuck behind them. And so then I had to pull them over because I used my rearview mirror. So, and they were great. They're a very nice man. I pulled him over and said, you know why? And he said, yes. And I said, why? And he said, because I snuck through. And I said, no. It was absolutely red. Buddy.
Wrong.
Absolutely red. No, but he's great. He works on peas. And so I said, just make sure that you behave the rest of the day because I will be on peas. And I didn't tell him why.
Right.
And then, yeah.
And now we just called him out. So,
yes, yeah, verbal warning, be safe. Thanks for your service.
Sir. Right. Hint. So. Yeah. And note to all drivers out there.
Yeah.
Cops do use their rearview mirrors.
Their rearview mirror. Yeah. And then somebody rewarded by paying it forward when I went to go get our coffees today. So, and then I paid it forward and bought somebody a burrito. And it was very nice. So, the lady in the white Jeep with the bumper sticker, I love Rhett's Rooster. Thank you.
Thank you for the coffee this morning.
Please, thanks you.
Thank you.
That's one of the best parts about Portsmouth Radio 5-0 is that I get coffee.
Yeah,
when you guys come
and
in.
And Valentine's Day late.
Right, yeah. And I got conversation hearts. Man, I'm done for the day. Might as well just go home.
That's right. Hang it up.
So anyway, so this week we're talking with Detective Seth Tondreau, who, so you're like the CSI dude.
Yeah, I guess you can call me that.
Who are you?
Yeah.
I'm a detective, but I'm also part of the crime scene team. So before I became a detective, I was a patrol officer on the crime scene team, which is, you know, what a lot of people refer to the CSI team.
Mm-hmm. So now I feel like I have to ask this question because, yes, it's fun to say, you know, you're the CSI guy because everybody knows CSI. But does it really work like that? Do you really get fingerprints back that quickly?
Not at all.
Can you solve a whole crime in an hour? Actually, 40
could.
Minutes
Seth,
without commercials.
That's probably good. Solve a whole crime.
I mean, yeah,
hour.
You can certainly solve a crime in an hour, but the processing of the evidence and the submittal to the labs and all the testing that goes into it, it does not take 5 seconds.
Oh, wait. Lab. We have one lab.
Labs. We use labs all over the place.
Wait, for the New Hampshire?
Well, yeah, we have New Hampshire, then we use private labs for other stuff. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, when you send something out, like a fingerprint, for instance, for a burglary, it might take 6 to 8 months to get a response back.
There's no app for that.
There's no app. I mean, trust me, if there was an app, I'd have it.
And right. That's if somebody's already got to be in the system.
We'd be
usually.
Solving cases all over the place.
Mm-hmm. So, do you find that that's often something that you're up against? Is that people, when you're working with people in various investigations, that they just want answers right away, and you just can't give them to them because there's sort of this.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, I think, thank you, television, basically.
Yeah, I think you know, a general rule, people's expectations, you know, is that it's going to take a short amount of time and that we'll have answers quickly. So I think it's kind of working with the victims and working with people to kind of keep them informed so they understand the process and understand that it's going to take a little bit longer and that it's not as quick as TV depicts. But yeah, it's a balancing act.
And also, like, you know, there's a caseload, too, which some people forget about. They don't know, and it's not that their case isn't a priority, but I don't want to know what your caseload is right now, but he could have 5 other cases that he's working, and if you have a burglary, but you're working a sexual assault or you're working, like, an overdose investigation, that might, not that your burglary is not important, but that may take
right.
priority.
But, then you come to a stopping point. It's like if you send everything off and then you have to wait for results, well,
yeah,
then,
that's
you know,
the part.
Then you have to swap it out and work on something else,
yep.
right?
Yeah, it's about time management. And like Michelle said, kind of prioritizing,
mm-hmm.
you know, what do I have to do today? I'll set up my hours, you know, for this 2-hour block, I'm working on this case. You know, I'm going to call this victim. I'm going to talk to this person. Then the next 2 hour block, I'm working on this case. I mean, it's all about kind of getting in the time when you can.
Mm-hmm. And then in the middle of it, there's a call out for another case. Yeah. So now that slows it down. And it's a totality of the circumstances, too. Like, it's great when you get a fingerprint result back, but it's also, what else did you do in your investigation that shows that it's definitely like this suspect and rules out anybody else? So they do a lot of work. And Portsmouth and Seth and the other detectives, like, pretty much do all their own processing and in case investigations. So big departments like New York, you just have, you know, usually detectives will just go out and interview people. But these detectives are like interviewing, they're processing the scene, they're packaging and sending things to the labs. They're doing all of it. So that's one thing sometimes people don't know about in Portsmouth.
Absolutely.
And how many officers are on the crime scene team?
I think there are four patrol officers. So you guys in the black and whites out there on the road.
Okay.
They get called in. There's actually four. And then essentially all of the detectives in so many ways are part of the team. So when we go to the scene, we're processing, as Rochelle said, we're doing all that work. But in terms of patrol assets that are part of the team, I believe there are four at this time.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah, and that's something that we have that not a lot of other agencies have. You know, you have patrol officers that are trained in evidence collection, processing, interviewing, and interrogation on the street. So these are officers that are coming to your house to answer calls that have, you know, advanced training. So that's a good thing.
And yeah, we have Detective Jocks, awesome. Like, who you know, you said, yep. You know, but he also, you know, is Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. And so sometimes, like, he can help with celebrating phones, or some of the other detectives can do, like, some of that electronic forensic work for us, too, which is a nice asset when they're not bogged down with their ICAT cases.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, in any given situation, you can sort of, depending upon the severity of it, you can sort of sub out what
quite
you need
capable.
To get done.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I say it, Portsmouth's a great PD. We have a lot of smart cops. We have a lot of well-trained cops. And, you know, whatever comes in, we can handle. And we can run to the end with it, which is, you know, a testament to the quality of officers that we have.
Mm-hmm. So now you came to Portsmouth via Epping.
Epping, I did.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And what were you doing in Epping at the time?
Same thing. I was I started there as a patrol officer. I was in my fifth year when I decided to transition over to Portsmouth. I was I'm on the regional SWAT team, the Seacoast Emergency Response Team.
Okay.
And I was on the team while I worked in Epping. I got to know a lot of the Portsmouth guys. I just fell in love with the PD.
And gals.
I fell in love with the PD, and I just decided to transition over. A little bit bigger, more opportunity to do some different things.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of felt like a good fit for me.
That's great.
Yeah. But I do miss the center of the universe. I learned a lot. I was certainly very busy out there. There's a great group of guys and gals.
Right.
And they do a great job out there for the town of Epping.
Well, not that we would want to call out the Seacoast Response Team for any other reason. But, you know, if they do, maybe you can get back to the center of the universe.
Yeah,
that's right.
Absolutely.
That's right. You have to go back to Epping. So Seth does so many great things in our department, but he's just really
wears
positive.
Wears multiple hats.
Yeah, he does, and he had this board made that's been really motivating for people, too. It's called the Good Guy Board, and it's like anytime we get something like a nice letter or a picture from a kid or something, you know, it gets posted up so you can walk by and see it, you know, every day. So it's just a nice reminder that, you know, that we do good things for the public and they appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice. But also, he's the president of our Portsmouth Police Relief Association, so I didn't know if you wanted to talk about that and kind of what we do.
Sure. So the PPRA is what we refer to as a benevolent association. Our goal is to do good for our members, you know, the members of the Portsmouth Police Department, but also the community we serve, Portsmouth. You know, the number one goal is if something happens to one of our guys or gals, whether it's a family issue, whether it's to that officer personally, we're there financially, emotionally, whatever we can do to help.
Mm-hmm.
That's our primary function. You know, that's what I'm very passionate about. I want to make sure that, you know, this job's hard enough for a lot of guys. It's, you know, the other stuff outside of it that we try to make sure stays in check so
right.
that, you know, you can get through your career and be happy and healthy and everyone's okay. But the community part of it's also a big piece. You know, we sponsor Little League teams. You know, we do a food drive. I mean, there's a slew of things that I can't, you know, list off right now, but we stay involved with the community because that's an important part too. But we've been around since 1948, so it's nothing new, you know. And guys and gals have been doing this for a long time, investing a lot of time and energy into the, you know, the members of the agency and in the community. It's something that, you know, I've been passionate about in the time that I've been serving, you know, and I think it's something that will, you know, move forward and continue to be a good thing for us.
Mm-hmm. And Rochelle was saying off the air, too, that you were also a big part of the piece that was done with Michael Venn, mm-hmm. the local filmmaker here,
mm-hmm. yep.
that you guys did in partnership with
the
him.
Public and service announcement.
Yeah, but it was a yep. bunch of other organizations, yep. too, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how that happened. I mean, we were talking about coffee. You know, coffee's an integral part of any cop's life. You know, I have to start my day with one. And that's how I got to know Michael Venn at Starbucks in the downtown. You know, we would just, you know, talk back and forth, and we got on the subject of, you know, the opiate issue, the heroin issue, and
mm-hmm. which thing, the Seacoast has been
ravaged.
Highlighted mm-hmm. on a national level, yep. also, mm-hmm. which was huge. I mean, and that was just a few years ago.
It's funny, well, because Michael Venn, for me, when I met him, it was before I was a police officer. So I used to wait tables at Cafe Espresso back in like 2001. I used
Get
to wait
out.
On, yeah, wait on him and his wife all the time. So we go way back. So it's nice to have this full circle with him, too, and be able, like, we're going to go see his movie and support mm-hmm. the movie coming out. But Seth did a lot with what you keep talking about.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's tough because I'm not a huge fan of being the face of anything. You know,
right.
I like to be in the background doing the work. I don't like to be necessarily the poster child for it. But it was an opportunity for me to kind of get out there and put a message out that was important to me. I think a lot of people are unaware of how this issue came to be. I think they think of it as some, you know, obscure issue in the back seedy areas of our community.
Right, that we're still detached from it. And
exactly.
we're not.
Not at all.
We're just not.
And a lot of the people, even the... You know, the most recent overdoses that we deal with, it, most of these people start with prescription medications. You know, 80% mm-hmm. of them start with prescription meds. And that's something that, as a parent, I would want to know. You know, what can I do? You know, I guarantee you, if you go home right now and you open your medicine cabinet, you could probably find a slew of, you know, prescription opiates. That mm-hmm. if, you know, when you're a kid and you're adventurous and you want to try something and you hear something at school and you go home and sure enough, there it is in your medicine cabinet. Little do you know that that could be the slippery slope to something, you know, far more drastic and severe down the road. So
yeah, we're immersed, and this community is immersed in it, and it's one of those things that's touching everybody, just like cancer, you know. And
do you find that that's the focus of a lot of your investigations?
Yeah, yeah.
From the crime scene team, yeah.
Right, just in detectives in general, a lot of the yeah. crimes we investigate are drug related, and to break down drug related, opiate or heroin related. I mean, a lot of what you hear now, heroin overdose. We're not seeing a ton of heroin. It's generally fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
Fentanyl is bad news.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about...
That's the synthetic, right?
Yeah. I mean, everything opiate is based off of morphine. Morphine is your gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
Fentanyl is 100 times stronger than morphine. So morphine's been around forever. Fentanyl is a synthetic opiate that's, you know, relatively new. But that's starting to make its way, or has made its way in the last few years, and that's what's killing people. Fentanyl... A very small, minuscule amount, you know, can kill you.
And it's dangerous to us, and we've had, and Seth put out some great information to us about packaging, too, and that's something to consider with the detectives that maybe some people don't think about, is that when we're exposing ourselves to this, too, if it's inhaled or absorbed, you know, through your skin, too, and a lot of things, there's a couple cases that are unsolved right now that they're trying to investigate that were just in the paper, and... I saw one lady had put a comment on Facebook, which I thought was a great question, and she just said, "Well, what's the difference? Like, why do we care if it's opioid related, you know, overdose as opposed to any other overdose?" And I thought that was a good question. And part of that for us too is obviously we want to investigate and find out the source of where they got this drug, especially mm-hmm. if somebody's selling something, you know, dangerous that potentially had to do with their death other than, you know, just an overdose. So, and so if anybody has the question of why we are particular about that, that's one of the reasons why we want to track back and make sure nobody else gets hurt, you know.
Absolutely.
So, and also just a quick segue, but Seth is also a member of the Hit It team, so we're talking about, you know, doing those investigations, and obviously there's the PSA part of it where you're trying to do prevention and recovery and support, and when we have Sergeant Kivini on, he's going to talk a lot more about that.
Mm-hmm.
But also the Hit It, what we're doing to interdiction as far as these drugs. I don't know if you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, we have the high intensity drug interdiction where we try to go out and we.
So that's what that stands for.
It, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I was going to acronyms.
Yeah. We're all about acronyms.
It sounds so
game.
Hip and with yeah. it, but I'm like, what does it mean?
What is Edge CFR? I feel like that's like electronic, like disco.
Yeah,
it's like.
No, Hit It.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly that.
Hit It was in response to the issue. You know,
right.
we realized that we needed to put a focused effort out on the street to try to nip this in the bud, if you will. And we got a group of guys, a bunch of go-getters, and we go out there and we, you know, we have targets, we have areas of operation that we, you know, we focus in on, and we've had results. And the goal is just to try to get out there and chip away at it the best we can, you know, get what we can off the street, work those networks back, and try to you know, cut it off.
Mm-hmm. And it's in collaboration. Difficult. It's absolutely in collaboration with your regular patrol duties where you stop a car, and a lot of these, like, I read the logs every night, our dispatch log, and we have officers that their noses sometimes seem to be better than canines. I mean, we're arresting people for drugs every night. I just saw, like, this week alone, crack cocaine, you know, heroin. There's fentanyl. There's prescription drugs. You know, like, this is happening on a nightly basis in Portsmouth, along with guns and this other stuff. And I'm not making, you know, mountains out of molehills. Like, this is
no, it's the
this
facts.
Is honest.
It's in the logs.
And
yeah.
Even though it's Portsmouth, it's a great town to live in, believe me, but your officers are out there absolutely, you know, in harm's way, trying to combat this on every single level. And then you have the HITT team mm-hmm. working in collaboration with the DEA that we have locally and the drug task force and our other undercover officers that are doing the drug buys and trying to get the dealers that way too. So it's a whole collective effort. And then also, like, with education in schools and the education in the community and the outreach, and also us trying to collaborate with the support, supportive groups in recovery, we're trying to do everything that we can because, you know, we know we can't arrest our way out of this as mm-hmm. well. But I mean, that is part of the process.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the biggest theme that I hear.
Yeah, sometimes trying to,
that you, that, you know, really that is, you can't arrest your way
no,
out of
sometimes,
it.
Sometimes, you know, that if it's appropriate, that's sometimes is the first step to getting somebody help as well and having them recognize that there is a problem.
Absolutely. Right.
You know,
mm-hmm. And heroin's unlike, I mean, opiates are unlike anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, people do things under the influence of opiates that, you know, they would never have done otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll sit down and you'll talk to these people objectively and they're like, I can't believe that I did that, but I had to.
It's like they're possessed, you know, that's what I look at it like. It's like you're, you know, but then when you look at other crimes too, it's like, all right, we had a lot of thefts, we had a lot of burglaries, we had a lot of car breaks and or car hopping or whatever you want to call it. And then what was the underlying issue of that or that domestic, you know, it's like usually there's an underlying issue of some sort of substance abuse, you know. So it's looking a little bit deeper to try and address that underlying issue as well, you know.
Absolutely.
And so how often, I mean, we're talking about sort of this rapid growth in opiate addiction, and it's not, you know, but just as soon as we all get comfortable with the word heroin being around all the time, it's not even about heroin anymore, we're onto fentanyl.
Yep.
And all that. Like, how often do you guys find yourselves having to go back through training and be re-educated and keep re-upping all that information to stay ahead of what's going on?
I think it's a constant process. It's literally daily. You know, our officers are encountering heroin and fentanyl and all types of drugs every single day. You know, these users, when we talk to them, you know, they use 2-3 times a day. Mm-hmm. So those are two or three opportunities to interact with the police during the day, and that's just one person. I mean, our officers are literally coming into contact all the time, and frankly, a lot of my education comes from those people.
Right.
You know, I talk to people, substance misusers, and I say, hey, listen, you know, can we talk off the record, but can I ask you some questions? You know, how do you do this? And how does this happen? What's this mean? You know, what does this mean when I see this? And that's kind of how I get my information. And we, you know,
every time you do your job too. So every time you do a stop, every time you make an arrest about drugs, even if it's a drug you haven't seen, you're getting the drug identification Bible. Or actually, if you ever come across a pill, one of the best resources that you have is calling poison control and describing it to them. They'll tell you exactly what mm-hmm. that medication is, but that's all training and experience that the officer can say. So when they go to do a warrant or something like that, it's like, my training experience is, you know, I've done 10 stops like in the last month that I've come across this drug, I've sent it up to a lab, it's come back as this. Like, that's also your training without formal training. But another way is too, is like, I went through a recovery coach training with another officer, and that's something that, you know, is a completely different, not a police training, but you are in there with people that are in recovery. Like, for me, I was ignorant. I said, you know, my first question was, well, how long is recovery? And, you know, it's like, actually Sandy Coyle, she was great. She's like, recovery is, you know, as long as
it's forever.
Yeah.
It's
you're
eternal,
in, and
yeah.
For me, I was like, what is that? Like the 6-month coin that, you know, I really didn't know. And
right.
I also didn't realize too about when they say that this is a disease and some of the terminology now too, like we're trying to get away from, you know, just referring to people as people with addictions or drug users or whatever. It's like, there are still people and there's personalities. So, you know, the preferred term is, you know, misuse, drug misuse, substance misuse, you know, disorder. Mm-hmm. But in how being addicted to heroin can become a disease, because for me, my belief was, well, at some point it was a choice that you picked up that needle and put it in your arm. You
right.
know what I mean?
Well, and there was just recently a story, I think this was a couple of Sundays ago, about a woman who unknowingly became addicted. She didn't even know.
Well, it shows where the brain, you know, actually breaks down, and now it does become a dependency. Now it is a disease because they can't function without that chemical, you know, and that's where it becomes a disease. Because to me, it's like, I think like cancer is a disease, obviously, you know. And so there's, that's a big education understanding too, where, you know, that training comes into play. And it's actually like what Seth said, by talking to people, you know, going outside the normal, you know, training and just learning from other people's experiences and them being open and honest with you, especially, you know, if not everything is just arrest and interrogation. A lot of it is like, we want to learn from you so that we can stop this, because, you know, it's not just preventing crime. It's, you know, keeping people safe, and we don't want that to happen. These are people we know, we care about. You know, somebody I just saw 3 days ago, and now they're, you know, they've had an overdose. It's like, wow, you know, that hits us, you
right.
know, and we have our own families, and we have our own friends, and we have our own people we went to high school with that, you know, aside from police interaction, that obviously are subjected to this as well, you know?
Well, and I certainly appreciate over the course of time, again, we're only three weeks in with this series, but
a lot of info.
No, one of the things that I have an inordinate amount of respect for is the level of dedication that you guys put in what you're doing, and trying to stay as up to date as possible and educated and informing people, even, you know, partaking in doing this every other week. So I can't say thank you enough for all the work that you're doing and being here. And I think I was ready for you to be here this morning.
I feel like we should. Yeah, we got to end on a light note.
Well, it's funny, you were talking about calling poison control about, you know, prescription pills.
Yeah.
If you were to see one somewhere, which is probably becoming more common than uncommon.
Yes.
But it's like, don't they have an app for that now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You should have an app, but you can scan it.
Yeah. But not like, everybody has a smartphone. What if you're a little older and you don't
want that flip phone?
You want that flip phone, girl.
That Boost
you still got that cord
flip
to the wall.
I'm so sorry for being so innovative. Oh, you guys, thank you very much. I know you have lots of work to do. Rochelle, I'm sure you have someone to pull over on your way back to work this morning.
Clearly.
Yeah, let me get out of the parking lot, okay?
Seth, I know, I think we're due to have you back in here, too, in a couple of weeks, too, which is great. So I thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.